Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the midweek version of the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Tonight, Kathy Ray will be back with the second show on metal threads that she did last. It was last month. She started talking about metal threads, and she had so many, we ran out of time. So continuation tonight. So join us at 8 o'clock Eastern on the Fiber Talk YouTube channel, and we'll learn more from Kathy Ray.
Yeah,
she does these out of the kindness of her heart. So, you know, folks, please support Needle in a Haystack, because you know, we're not exchanging money or anything else. It's just Kathy for the good of the cause, and really appreciate it. And every one of those shows has been enlightening in so many ways. It's really been good.
Right. They're great references. They're great, you know, to go back and rewatch if you had a question. I said, I think Kathy did something on this. I know there's at least one on when she was splitting threads.
Yes.
I've rewatched. It's fantastic. Just fascinating stuff. So.
Yeah, that's the one that continues when every time that we mention this, that's the one that pops into my head. Is that night she was splitting threads and then splitting them again and showing us what you could do with them was
right.
Really, it, you know, it just opens doors if you want to be creative and try different things. It really was amazing what she could do with that and what she knew. And then, of course, some of them in that show, I don't know, let's give it a try, you know, see what happens. Yeah.
Just a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, she really is. She really is. So, 8 o'clock tonight, we're going to do more Thread Talk with Kathy Ray, and we like that. Now, Sunday's guest is Christine Miller. Now, we had Ruth Miller 2 weeks ago. This week, Sunday is Christine Miller, and Christine does all kinds of needlework. She's a multi-technique artist, too. But these days, holy smokes, it's so cool. She's into weaving. She's, like, deep into weaving. But weaving with wire.
Right.
Wow.
And it's not flat. It's not like something you tapestry. It is very 3D, very cool stuff.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. And of course, then once you get a fabric that has wire in it, then she, of course, takes those and she can make all kinds of shapes. And yeah. So. And plus, she was just fun, just fun.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Sunday. That's a good one. That's a good one. I always say they're all good, but they are. Mm-hmm.
And these are it's fun to listen to these and to talk to these people because it's not just what we normally think of as needlework. It kind of gets you out of your normal little wheelhouse, kind of gets my mind spinning and thinking about different ways to use needle and thread. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah. So, Sunday, Christine Miller. Now it's been an interesting ride. We had Natalie Dupuy on the Wednesday show a couple weeks ago.
I think so.
Yeah. Cause I mean, Natalie, highly accomplished gold work artist, designer, Ornue, couching, all those things. And she's working on becoming a judge. And so we're going to talk about her a little bit because I think it's an interesting thing and I'm sure she won't mind. She's working on becoming a judge. And as part of her effort to become a judge, she is tackling projects with techniques she's never done. And
yes.
particularly counted techniques. And it's worth talking about because, you know, when people start out, we'll use cross stitch because cross stitch is, you know, quite frankly, the simplest of the techniques. I mean, it's making X's and following a grid. So, but when you see posts and you see people asking questions that to most with some experience are just, you know, again with this question and really you need to know that and. You know, somebody will always answer, and it's so important, no matter who it is, if they're asking the question, it's sincerity. Help them out. Even if you've answered
right.
it 1,000 times, help them out because These people don't know. They may not even know what questions, you know, because the first thing is, well, why don't you search for an answer? Well, they don't even know what question to ask to do the search.
Right,
so,
right.
So help them out, you know. It won't hurt. But then, all right, so you take, that's a rank beginner, someone who just wants to try cross-stitch. Now you take it all the way to the other end of the spectrum, and Natalie Dupuy, who, if you've seen any of her work, there's no question she is a very talented, experienced, highly skilled needlework artist. I mean, no debate whatsoever. Superb teacher, the whole shooting match. But she's
right.
Her world does not focus on counted stitching.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is going through that, as experienced and talented as she is, she's going through that same thing of learning what are the little things that you have to do counted work.
Right. And we forget, someone taught us all these things, you know, not just, you know, so where to start a thread, you know, how to start a thread, why you use one method over another. Those are all techniques someone showed me over time. I didn't know when I first started. I just, you know, ran it under and away I went. You know, I didn't know about the pin stitch or, you know, why you would use an away waist knot versus a waist knot. And there's places for all of that stuff. And if we don't answer people's questions, they're never going to learn. So, and the way people are getting their questions answered anymore is via the internet, social media, a lot of times. Although right. The other day we had a gentleman come to my guild meeting, actually in between two meetings. Somehow he found out we were meeting and he came over with, he had a lavender and lace angel. He was working on 14 count blue Ada. It was beautiful. He was almost done. But it was the first, done like eight of these lavender and lace angels, but they've all been profiled. This one was a full face on, and so the stitches were over one because it's meant to be done on 28 count, some sort of 28 count linen. And he was like, I don't know what to do. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to split your eight. I mean, he was almost done. He literally had bead work to do, the face and the hand. He was not restitching this piece, right?
Yeah.
He said, you know, on the side, or if you have a, and he said, I have a scrap of Ada. I said, I would do the whole face and practice it. And I said, any place that looks like it's a whole stitch, do the whole stitch. See if that looks okay. If not, you're going to have to split the thread and go right down into the middle and split them, which is hard to do. But his work was excellent. But, you know, how would he know? He didn't know that. He said, I figured that's what I was going to have to do. He said, but I figured I needed to ask somebody.
Right,
and I was like,
right.
Yeah. And just talking it through, just saying, hey, don't do it on your piece. Grab a scrap of Ada and practice this base.
Yeah.
And then the other day I thought, oh shoot, I should have said, if I had known he'd been coming, I would have brought a piece of 28 count even weave with me and said, big enough on a hoop, and say, try stitching it, the face on this and appliquing it on. I mean, because his work was perfect. And to do the face where you're splitting the threads might make it not look as nice. And I thought, well, and I would have just given it to him and said, hey, take it, try it. If you don't like it, throw it away. It's, you know, it's a scrap. Well, you know, if you don't try it.
Right.
But yeah, you know, if we don't show people how to do those things and teach them, they won't ever know.
Right. Yeah. No, it's very true. And you have to help all of them because, like I said, a lot of them, they simply don't know the question to ask. You know, and you ended up helping her because I was otherwise occupied, and you ended up helping Natalie quite a bit. But she was wondering, you know, what's a quarter stitch, what's a three quarter stitch,
right?
You know, those kinds of things, and asking several questions, and that are all fundamentals. But again, she's not done it. That's not her world, And and so this experienced, talented designer is asking the questions that many rank beginners ask, because you got to find out somehow. And, you know, is there a book for how to cross-stitch? Yeah, not really. Is there, there probably is, but it you know,
I don't know. I don't.
Was it say make an X this way or a line this way and then go over the top of that and make an X, you know?
But also there's all sorts of things that you learn as you go along. So she's constructing a box.
Yes.
And there is, I've made that a tui, and I did it with my guild, and we sourced our own linen. And then when a few of us assembled it, finally got ours made and assembled, we realized the reason Willing Hands, Betsy Morgan piece, you need, the linen makes a difference. We had a hard time constructing it so everything matched up.
Oh.
Because we didn't use the linen she suggested.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And you can make it work. You can get it to work. But it would have been a lot less frustrating at that assembly stage if we had what she suggested.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's all those things that if you've never done it before, no matter what your experience level, you need somebody to help you out. You know, at least get you pointed in the right direction. And if you're a person who's inclined to figure things out, fine. But where do I start? What's step one? So it was just really illustrative. And when she was on the Wednesday night show here a couple of weeks ago, talking about the discovery that if you miscount, then everything gets thrown off after that. So counting, you know, be double checking your counting as you go. Because it's not always easy to compensate for that, where if you're doing surface embroidery or gold work or something, you make an adjustment and you move on. And so it was kind of eye-opening for her for that. And it's interesting seeing someone experienced go through these things and ask those questions. And then, of course, you have the people who are just starting asking the same questions. You know, both ends of the spectrum. And then on top of that, I really applaud Natalie, who is, you know, working to become a certified judge and then is literally taking time. And I imagine other judges do that too, but literally taking time to learn techniques and experience techniques that she probably won't do again because it's just not her interest level or area of interest. And, but to at least have some firsthand knowledge and experience with them, so when she goes to judge, she knows what she's looking at. And
right,
you know, I applaud that. Yeah,
right, because you know, there's different things that make a difference when you're looking at a piece, whether it's cross stitch or surface. You know, what are you looking for? And she's taking that time. And she's jumping into a fairly large piece too that has a lot of things that she doesn't know, so she can learn.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And it may well be that anybody who does judging does the same kind of thing. I mean, that may be, but in this case, it's somebody we know who is actually going through the process. So it's interesting to see, and interesting to hear what she's doing. But, you know, in my view, from my perspective, she's doing it exactly the way you would want a judge to do it, so that when they judge your piece, they've at least done a cross stitch piece. They've at least done a white work piece and appreciate that, how to make cluster blocks and anchor them down and all those things. So, you know, bravo. I mean, that's fantastic. But yeah, those same questions come up even from the most experienced people. Yep.
Just take time to answer them.
Yeah, it really is. It is worth it. Yeah, and we talked, what Cindy and I talked a couple weeks ago about, or maybe it was last week, about young people, getting young people involved in I don't know, maybe we talked about that after we talked about, after we did the show. I don't remember. But yeah, the whole question of getting young people and new stitchers involved comes up, and it's important. And the only way they're going to get involved, though, is if people with experience are helpful, not judgmental, and helpful, and get them started. And like, you know, like for you, if you'd known that guy was going to show up, you would have come armed to give him some options. And
right.
And you know, I'm sure he would have been very grateful for that. Whether he used it or not is not material. It's the fact that you help someone get over a hump and figure things out. And
right. And we've been discussing a lot in our guild, you know, how do we get younger people involved? And so we've been brainstorming it a lot. And one thing we've talked more about doing is reaching out more to 4-H. You know, I kind of live in a more rural area. 4-H is very big around here. And the homeschooling groups, which are also, I know of several large ones in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, reaching out to them. Now, you know, they're not going to become members of our guild, obviously, but planting those seeds, you know, getting them interested in needlework, and showing them all the options that are out there. I think there's an interest. Most people just don't know that there's groups of people that do this.
Yeah.
You know? And that we have lots and lots of techniques besides cross stitch.
Yes. Yeah.
And not only that, you know, by the time this gentleman had shown up, there were only a handful of us at the meeting, because it was between the two. But even the people that were there had a wealth of knowledge, you know, could have taught him all sorts of stitches if he'd wanted. You know what I mean? It, you know, there's a wealth of knowledge in these guilds that we can offer, but we don't know how to reach. It's harder to reach younger people, and we're at a loss. You know, how do we find these people that want to learn something and let them know that we're out there? We're right here, and we're willing to teach them.
Yes. Right. Well, that's just it. Yeah. Willing to teach. And, at least, you know, here's how to thread a needle. Here's the cloth you need to start. Here's what a floss is. Here's how you get six strands out of it. You know, and here's how you make an X. Now go do it. And if you have questions, let me know. Not right. Hovering over their shoulder. Oh, you didn't do that right. You know, just let them learn, let them experiment and learn. And how many people have we talked to that were exposed to needlework at a young age and then didn't do it for years and then got into their adult years and raising kids and, you know, I need something in the evening just to give me an escape. And then the fact that they'd been exposed to needlework early on comes back and then becomes something that they really enjoy doing and for many a passion. And so you're right. 4-H expose them, give them some experience, so that they can have that in their heads. You never know when it pops up.
Right, right. So. And we've been my local library is they've expressed an interest, and these are people that maybe are more they're still working, so we're going to try to do something on Saturdays once a month. Mm-hmm. Where someone said, please, I want a basics. I want to know, well, a more advanced basics. But how do you start and stop with a pin stitch? How do you stitch on linen? A lot of them stitch on Aida, and they were really curious about that. And so we're going to offer that coming up. And then they're interested in learning white work. And so I'm going to find a pattern online. Make a sample, and we're going to try teaching that there and try to reach people, at least in my little local community. But because I think there's a curiosity for different techniques too. I think people, I know when I started, when I joined the Embroiderers Guild, I could do surface embroidery, crewel work, and then I could do cross stitch. And then I learned needlepoint. I learned hardanger from joining EGA. Mm-hmm. And opened my eyes to all the different things that are out there. So it would be nice to, I don't know. I like teaching people though. So, you know, I like teaching people new techniques. I like that when all of a sudden they grasp something or something that you think is just so simple.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this is life changing. This, you just changed my whole day.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is it. This is amazing sort of thing. I love doing that. So.
Yep. Well, there's nothing quite like it. I mean, that's, you know, I spent a few years teaching in public schools, and when the little light goes on in the back corner of the room, it's like, yes, victory, you know, all this hassle and blah, blah, blah every day. And that one kid finally lit up. Yes, it's worth everything. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right.
It really mm-hmm. is. Yeah. So no, I know that feeling. Yep. I do. It's special. It's what keeps people teaching, because at all levels. Yeah. That's right. Interesting. You know, that's an interesting thing, trying to reach young people and using the library, because today's library is so very different from when we grew up. They're not there just to dispense books anymore. They have so many things going on, and it really is, in just about every library, it really is a place where they're looking to offer educational opportunities, and needlework is a perfect fit for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And they're trying to, like, I know ours is trying, because, again, I live in a small community. They're trying to be the community center. So
yes.
That local people can gather and meet. They already have a crochet knitting group one evening a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a place to gather. And I suggest that people stitch. I know there's a group that meets at one of the larger libraries in town at least once a month. And I know our guild is talking about, now that a lot of the COVID restrictions are lessening, stitching in public, stitching at a Panera or a local grocery store chain has a, like a public area that they can, you can sit and stitch.
Yeah.
And stitching in public and just show, you know, just so people know that there's other people that stitch. I think people are always surprised, you know, that they're not the only ones that are in the community that stitch.
Yeah. 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 How many people do you bring out of the woodwork just doing that? Yes.
Right. Right. Especially for us, we don't have a local needlework store anymore. There's nothing, within a 3-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there is one store that maybe is an hour and a half from me. So. Oh.
Yeah. 3 hours round trip. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, of course, your base, well, never mind. We won't talk about your basement as a store, but,
people can't shop there. My shopping store.
But yeah, because Debbie Rowley, a few weeks ago mentioned about, a group that they were talking about going to the Student Union Center on a college campus and mm-hmm. stitching in public. And trying to reach the college age students. And I think that's when you talk about, because I know those grocery stores that will have a little cafeteria public area, and to just be there just so people can see it done. And if somebody's curious enough, they can say, hey, what are you guys doing? Not promoting it, dragging people in here. Here's a needle. Here's some thread. Don't you want to do this? Well, no, just be, let people know that this exists. And if they're curious, they can ask for more information. And if you have a piece of cloth there and a thread here, give it a try if you want. Yeah.
Right. And also, you know, just promoting, you know, the art or, and some people, they do like to stitch alone, but it's fun to stitch in a group. I at one point thought of no longer being a part of my local guild. I was busy, I had young kids, and I thought, why do I do this? And I thought, oh no, I know why. It's because I can get together with my friends. We can sit and chit and chat and talk. We can, you know, you share your problems, sometimes over the needle and thread. Mm-hmm. And get close to people and you build those relationships, and those relationships are important in our lives. I think that's one thing that, the isolation of COVID taught people, is that those relationships are important. We don't want to lose those.
Right.
And, even though at one point I thought of throwing up my hands, and this was well before COVID. I don't need to go to these meetings anymore. But I thought, no, I have friends, and I have friends I want to meet with and visit, and I do learn things. I'm always learning something new. So,
well, at some point when raising kids, I want to have an adult conversation. Get me out of here.
Yes, absolutely. I'm like, okay, you get the kids tonight. I'm gone. Midnight. The coffee shop closes at midnight, and I'll be home after it closes.
Yep. Yeah, you put them to bed. You deal with that.
You deal with them. Tonight. Yeah,
but it's just, you know, to me, for a local chapter, ANG, EGA, whatever it might be, almost your top priority these days should be outreach, mm-hmm. rather than programs for your 7 o'clock meeting on the second Tuesday of the month. What is outreach? You know, like first item in the business meeting, what are we doing for outreach? What are we doing to expose others to needlework so that we might have new members, or whether they join or not, and young people don't like to join, but we have new people that we've brought into the hobby, and you know, if they don't want to come to the 7 o'clock meeting on Tuesday night, fine. But at least they're stitching. At least they're enjoying what we enjoy, and so it seems to me that should be these days the top priority for guilds, because you got to bring in the new people, or you know. The hobby's going to die. I mean, none of us are getting any younger. And if new people don't come along and enjoy this and develop designers and so on and so forth, it's going to fade away. And mm-hmm. none of us wants that.
Right. And my take on that is, if we don't have a program, it's just a sit and stitch. You don't have anything to offer someone who's coming in the door. I prefer, you know, you and I both prefer larger, year-long, take forever projects, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll have to say, the ones we've gotten the most response out of for our guild are the ones that are shorter, where mm-hmm. they're learning technique. My guild did a few lessons where they're learning Hardanger. I was surprised by how many people, I thought almost everyone in our guild had taken at least one Hardanger class with us, but a lot of them hadn't, and they were taking this little project, and it was simple, but carefully working through and getting over that, like, yeah, we're going to cut the threads now. Which is always
oh no.
But holding people in, and it's nice to have those programs being offered, and we're doing several at the same time. I'm doing More Than a Rose, the group correspondence course. Someone's doing the Hardanger, and then there's a group of people just stitching, mm-hmm. bringing their stitching along. So we got three groups going after the business meeting. But it gives some variety, so that way when they're saying, well, what do you guys do at your meetings? Well, we're teaching you techniques. We're teaching you something new. You'd like to learn something, we'd love to teach it to you. And it gives that opportunity. But yeah. we need for our outreach. They're absolutely, because if you're right, if we don't do something, the guilds will die. We need to let people know we're here, you know, both ANG and EGA. And not just, you're right, sit in our little enclave and stitch and never reach out to anybody else. Yeah, that just, that's not going to fly.
No. Well, and another thing that is missing from the equation that was there 10 years ago and into the past is a store that someone might drive by one day and be curious about. They, like for you, there isn't, you say there's one store within an hour and a half, but legitimate stores, it's a 3-hour drive. Well, okay, in that 3-hour radius, how many people either stitch or might stitch if they knew about it, but the chances of them driving by a store that says needlepoint or cross stitch on the sign is essentially zero. So that factor is not at play anymore. So they have to find some other way to we have to find some other way to expose them to needlework. And right. You know, that's the people who are doing it every day need outreach. I mean, it just has to be outreach. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're not unique. Every hobby except quilting and knitting, of course, deals with this issue. My dad, who's 86, 85, 86, something like that, he's a model train enthusiast, like a maniac. And he and I have had that same discussion, you know, that the young people, trains don't mean anything to them because they didn't grow up with them. And he said the hobby is literally dying off. And, you know, and I can see that there's no outreach. There's no effort in those clubs. You have to do it. You know, churches are dealing with the same thing. Young people on Sunday morning is just collapse. You want me to get up and go to church? No, I don't go. We won't preach about whether they should or not, but it's the same kind of thing. And so then outreach becomes critical. How do you do things that attract young families to the churches? Same kind of thing. And all these organizations are dealing with that because people are, you know, raising kids. They're busy. They
pulled a million different directions. Much more so than even when I was raising my kids. And my mother-in-law always commented, "You're going where and you're doing what?" And I homeschooled. So I was like, I could be gone every single day with my kids doing something. I said, we don't, we stay home most of the time. And she was just shocked by how much we did. And I was like, no, you just don't know how busy these parents are anymore, you know, with what they've got going on. And so we have to reach them. You know, I highly recommend stitching in public. I always took stitching with me. My kids didn't do sports, but when piano lessons, if I was sitting and waiting for him somewhere, I always had stitching. And even just doing that, I always would get someone, not always, I would get someone to come over and look. What are you doing? What are you working on? So can I see? And just the willingness to stop and to show them, yeah, this is what I do. This is,
yeah, yeah.
You know, we just need to do that more. We need to be out there. And it is too bad we don't have a shop here locally. I'm jealous of all those places that have a shop where you can go and get together and stitch, and have a space. The one in New Mexico, the needlepoint shop, I think it's called the Twisted Stitcher.
Twisted Stitches. Yes.
Okay. It's a beautiful shop, and they had a beautiful back room. And when I was in there, there were several ladies back there working on very large pieces. They're like, yeah, I don't have room in my house for the stand. So I just set it up here, and then I come here a couple times a week and I stitch. And I'm like, how fun is that? Yeah. I want to grab my stand and come sit here with you ladies. But yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool to have a storefront and good lighting and just an open space, and you know, everybody throw in some money in the kitty to pay for the rent and the heat and the lights, and just come and go. You know, somebody's there between 9 and 9, 7 days a week, and just, you know, bring your stitching in. If you need to leave it, fine. You know, here, put it over here. We'll create a space for you or something. You know, just wouldn't that be fun to have? Just, and then you can go and gather with people, and people can set up. You know, a half dozen of us are gathering on Tuesday mornings at 10. Join us.
Right.
You know, right. And even because a lot of stores, retail space is valuable. So mm-hmm. A lot of them just simply don't have place for people to sit. And, but, oh, wouldn't that would be really cool to be able to do that.
And to meet. And because after a while, when you're meeting with a group of people, you get to know them and know, you know, and it's building that relationship. It's not just the stitch part, because the stitching is fun, but it's building the relationships too that are so important.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. That's where libraries come in, and a church that we used to attend now long ago, the church next door built a new place. And so the congregation that we were members of bought the church next door and bought it primarily. I have no idea what they do now, but the original idea was it had a lot of education space. And so it was to make this education space available for community groups. And whether they followed through or not, I don't know. It's been so long that, you know, I lost touch completely. But, you know, that was the idea. We now own all this space. Let's make it available for people, community groups, whatever they might be. And of course, that stuff you have to schedule, but even so, to be able to do that is really an excellent opportunity. You know, no pressure, no nothing. Drop in. We'll be here for a couple hours. You want to stay for a half hour? Fine. It doesn't matter. But right. To have a storefront, yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's time to sit, because it would require someone dedicated to be there at X time.
Yeah, yeah. There's a place here in St. Louis that Marg and I just went to. There's a place for kids that is all kinds of activities, and it is called the something house. Forget. I knew I'd forget. But anyway, they have an auxiliary thing in another part of town where they've taken an old warehouse, and it's called MADE, M-A-D-E. And they have that concept. Now, of course, it's they want to cover their costs. But they have two levels of space, and one is sewing machines for quilting. They have laser cutters. They have a whole wood shop, a metal shop, something else, but you know, fully equipped. And so you can go in, and if you want to work on a project, so for instance, you want to do some woodwork, you want to build a box, you can go in there and rent time and use all their machinery. And they have it all there, and they'll train you to use it. So if you want to do laser cutting or laser etching, they have a machinery there, and they'll train you how to do it, and then you can do whatever your project is. And it's just the neatest thing. And then they have upstairs, they have a whole place for kids. For instance, when we were there, remember those pot holders that you made by stringing? You had a metal frame. What was that?
Mm-hmm. It's a loom. It's some sort of metal loom.
Yeah, with teeth or poles all the way around. And so I had made one of those, you know, when we were kids. We made them all the time. But so I taught Cooper, the oldest of our grandsons. We made one. And then there was, I'd forgotten how to end it off. You know, once you get it all woven, how do you end it off? But there was a lady there with a crochet hook, and she ended off all the way around. And so he walked out of there with this pot holder, which they're calling a pie holder, but you know, kids, whatever. But so they have a place for kids to make stuff. The electronics, there's a place where you can just hook up little things and make a light go on. and all those things. It's a great place. And I've actually thought about talking to them about doing some kind of a needlework thing. Because that's what they're all about, is giving you a chance if you want to do some of these crafts, hobbies, whatever. And so the upstairs is kids and the downstairs is adults. And a big warehouse, and they have people there all the time to help you out and train you or whatever. And it's just a great concept. And, that there's needlework. There's an opportunity there for needlework. So,
right. And I know there's one similar in Cincinnati because my son looked into it because he was like, he couldn't take CNC machine with him to college. He doesn't have room in his dorm or in his apartment. But anyway, I'd love to get rid of that thing. Anyway, that's another story. But they have those, I know Cincinnati has one, but they're big maker places, and they have all sorts of things. Yeah, you're right. Just so you can do things with your hands, physically make something.
Yeah.
I love the concept.
Yeah.
And then there's maker fairs that they used to have. Now, COVID has changed all this. I haven't seen ads for, but they were trying to get one started here in the Quad Cities area.
It's called Maker what?
Maker's Fair.
Okay.
And it's like, it's kind of like a county fair or whatever, but it's for people who make things to show what they make. It's not like I don't think you're selling something necessarily, but more just show things that are made by hand or made. So I think like robotics teams would show up for them and show their robotics. And then I think like spinners. So you'd go, the whole gamut, so you'd have the spinning at one end and then the robotics at the other.
Yeah.
So, but anything in between. So it's the same sort of concept, but there's a huge one I know in California, a maker's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're cool. It'd be great to, and I thought when that was going on, I thought, this is someplace where we ought to, my local guild should set up a little booth just to hand out flyers, just to take names, just to sit and demonstrate. This is what we do.
Right.
Here we are.
Right. Yep. Yeah. So that, there are opportunities if you look, and Magic House is the parent. I knew it was going to come to me, is the, this giant, giant mansion of a house, and they've added on to it. And I don't know if there's four or five levels of just activities for kids, and they're all science oriented kinds of things. Like there's a whole Lego table with a ramp to run your car down. And there's a fishing pond where you use magnets on the ends of poles to get fish. And there's a whole grocery store full of, fake box made up like cans of corn and milk and ice cream. And so you can go in there and go shopping, or you can be the person running the cash register. And so the Magic House is that. And then this maid thing is an extension that they have. And, the opportunities are there. And now that we've talked about it, I really should give them a call and see about, what we might do. Because they have a whole area in the front where we could just have chairs. And if I could get four or five people to come with me, we could just sit and stitch in public
just to show this is stuff we do,
yep,
people are doing this.
Yep, another thing you can make. This is another thing you can make here. So all right, well, yeah, I think that's the bylaws for groups, for chapters and guild chapters, is item one, outreach. What are we doing? First thing on the meeting agenda, what are we doing for outreach? Because that's the future,
Right.
Yep.
All right, I got to ask you, did you get your anchor threads?
I did. I'm most curious. Yes, they sent me a sample set of anchor threads on spools. And so, I don't know, they sent 16 colors I don't know. Why do I do these shows and then I have these little things where I could have counted, easily counted, and then know how many I have, okay? So I'm going to pause here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 colors. So he sent me 12 spools. One is variegated. Different colors of anchor thread, anchor floss on spools. And it, the spools are 10.9 yards, 11 yards. Why don't they just make it 11 yards? Oh, because they made it 10 meters. So, all right. So basically get with the metric system, Americans. So they made it 10 meters on these spools. And then they sent me two spools, one black and one white, larger spools that are 30 meters or 33 yards of floss. And it looks, it's weird because it, when you look at it, it looks like almost like sewing thread. But then when you take right. when you take the thread off the spool, it's six strand floss, just like we're used to with DMC. And the colors are beautiful. There's a nice sheen to them, the whole shooting match. And so they have these on spools. And then what I'm going to do for a Wednesday show coming up here, probably next week, Kathy Ray tonight, and probably next week, I'm going to take some 40 count and I'm going to stitch with some of these threads and just make some blocks and do some DMC next to it so we can see that basically you can't tell the difference. And
I'm curious. I'm really curious about the black and white because of the two things people have said is that they think that if you want a better coverage, not to use the DMC, but to use the anchor, especially on the black, supposedly has a slightly better coverage. And it could remember, you know, dyes make a difference. In your thread. So I am very curious about that. I am really curious to see if that makes a difference. And I'm anxiously awaiting your experimentation there.
Well, I'm pulling off, and it looks like I pulled off the end that is way underneath the wrap. I pulled off the wrong end. Well done.
Perfect.
Well, it was the one that actually had thread. Oh, here. No, I didn't. I got it. I got it. Everybody relax. I got it. So, it's twisted underneath another thread. So, anyway, I will say it does seem like the black is a little thicker. Just pulling that off. So, okay. So, I'll make sure I have black and white blocks. For when we show this. So I'll try and get that done for next Wednesday. But, really convenient. The spools, I've never been concerned about the, like if you put DMC floss on bobbins, and you know, they get folds as it goes around the bobbin. That's never bothered me. And I have always wrapped DMC on bobbins loosely so it wouldn't get a crease. So for me, that problem has never been an issue, but I know some people, it's a real bugaboo with that. And so that goes away with the spools.
Right.
And then of course the pulling of here, now I got to just a second. I got to get a needle because I got this thing wrapped underneath the other one. So now let me get a needle here and it's black on black on black. So now I can't really see it. But and I'm sitting here, and I want it unwound, and it's driving me nuts. So bear with me a second.
Okay. It's not taped underneath the label, is it?
Well, no, I pulled that out, but they had threaded it under a couple of other strands. So, it's going to take I can't do it here. But anyway, so I got to get that unwrapped. But anyway, that that's trivial. I'm getting all hung up on something that really is of no meaning. Here, let me pull the thread off of another color. And, they are under. You know how they make the little slit in the plastic spool that you pull the thread under?
Mm-hmm.
Suckers are tight. Well, of course, they're tight because they don't want them coming loose and shipping. But since I'm sitting right here at my table full of stitching supplies, I'll pull out a pair of tweezers. And
so how do you think you would store those? Because obviously you use like some sort of cases for your bobbins.
Well, I would store these just like I'd store sewing thread.
Okay.
Without a doubt. I mean, I'd just get some kind of a spool thing because you could even get something with spindles because, yeah, I mean, there's true spools there. They have a hole down the middle. So, yeah, I would get some kind of a sewing thread storage thing. Oh, here it is. All right, pretty soon I'm going to become an expert on getting floss off of spools. Oh, they had glued the label down over the ends, so I couldn't get it loose. But that's the other thing, is that with the spools, that is a real plus, is that the number of the color is on a label right on the spool.
Yes.
So, because, you know, if, like, for instance, when I take mine off bobbins, then I have to make sure I write the right, correct number on the label on the bobbin, and some people will use the keep the label and just use the skein and keep the label on there. So there, now I got it loose without destroying everything. But yeah, so the color stays right there. And then this is just unwrapping and it's just floss. I mean, it's just, so you could get, go wherever sewing supplies are sold and get some storage device for spools of thread. And this would work out great. And something clear.
Something so you could see it. I'm curious because I know some of the big chain stores are starting to carry Anchor. I'm wondering if the needlework stores will be carrying it. They used to. If I wanted Anchor for a project, my local needlework store carried it, and that was the only place you could get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they still carry Anchor, local needle, stores, and if they're going to change over to the spool,
right?
Because they used to come in skeins, because I have skeins of Anchor floss. I always thought it was fine, because I have used it, a few times a pattern would call for it, and DMC didn't have that in the color range, and it kind of looked odd if you used something in between, so you'd go to Anchor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also curious what shops are going to do. You're talking about limited retail space earlier.
Yeah.
To carry those spools. I mean, because I know Anchor has a huge color range also.
Right. Yeah. They sent me a chart here. They sent me a printed chart of all the colors, and they have with variegated. What does it say? Surely it says how many colors they have. 450 colors in the regular spool, so that's the 10-meter spool, 10.9 yards. And then they have 20 colors in the bigger spools. So, there's a snow white, so there's white in the big spool. That's what I have that they sent me. But there are three reds, China rose dark, crimson, and carmine. Violet very dark that you can get in the large thing, violet light, cobalt blue in the larger spool, medium dark and very dark. So there, throughout the common colors, I guess you would say, they are available in large spools. So there's 20 of those, and then 450. I forget what DMC has, but 450. So. There's a printed color chart that they sent me, and then I wrote to the lady and asked about a thread chart, and they don't have that, but they're working on it. So I said, please send I'll pay for, happy to have.
Right.
Yeah. And nice then somebody, after we talked about it last week or the week before, somebody sent me links. I'll put them in the notes. There is a link for conversion from DMC to Anchor and back and forth, which helpful too. So,
right.
Because, you know, I mean, it, you can't ignore the fact that DMC is just the foundation of needlework. But I think this is... this is a good move by Anchor to put these on spools. It gives them a, it's a different approach. And yeah, I wonder too if that makes DMC think about, do we do things on spools? I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Right. Kind of. Yeah. If they're going to change things up rather than the floss.
Right.
Pack come in.
Yeah.
So know.
It's, yeah, it's, so it's interesting, and I, you know, I have a bunch of Anchor thread that I inherited. I think I described how I inherited it last time, and
right.
So I have a bunch, but I've never stitched with it. It just sits there. But now, just playing with this here while we're talking, there's I'd be hard pressed to say to be able to tell the difference. DMC no. to Anchor.
Right. And and there used to be times when people would they preferred Anchor. I could never tell the difference between the two
yeah.
when I stitched with them.
Yeah, so if you know if somebody's thinking, "Oh, that's, you know, that's not as good as DMC." Well, I would argue that just playing with it here. I would argue that
right.
vehemently. I don't know how you tell the difference. Yeah. No,
yeah.
This is nice. You know, it has that sheen to it that you would that you want, and bravo. And you know, you know, there's the other thing, on spools. You know, you don't have to.
You don't
really...
have to bob.
What's that?
You don't have to bobbinate it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly, yeah. and cutting lengths, no big deal, you know, just spin off some, and
right.
Something here, I think. I've completely messed up this black. Oh, there it goes. Got it. Victory. It was becoming a thing. It was becoming a thing. I couldn't get this black unwound. Now I have the black unwound. It was my fault. You know, it was rookie error, but yeah. And several people wrote when we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and apparently are fairly regular users of Anchor Floss. So it just doesn't get talked about. But geez, why not? Why not?
Right, right. And I think Cindy was right. I think it used to be able to get a lot of charts came with D and. It was DMC or Anchor,
right?
You know, and then they moved to the over dyes. So now it's the over dyes and DMC,
right?
Oh, it'll be interesting to see what the designers do too, since Anchor is now so much more readily available
mm-hmm.
to stitch with,
right?
Right. Whether they'll include it more in their repertoire, even if. Like I said, I think DMC has some holes in it. So does Anchor fill those holes? That'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure you know that function as a designer to fill gaps in the thing with Anchor. But I don't see. There's certainly no reason why you wouldn't just do Anchor, and if. Because, yeah, I agree with you. I think I'm sure I have some old charts that the standard setup was here's the DMC and here's the Anchor color.
Right.
I'm sure, yeah, some of my old charts have the same thing, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and move all, right. See if the designers move all the way over to just using Anchor.
Yeah. But, The spool is a nice, almost, can we say convenient? I think there's a convenience here.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to skeins.
I bet it fits beautifully on the skein holder that my husband made for me.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. So yes, so that's fun. I'll do a little stitch them up. I'll make sure and do black and white and compare them.
Yes.
But that's a new term. Yeah. Stitch them up. Yeah.
Stitch them up.
Yeah, stitch them up. That's what we're calling it. So, so fun. So a new development from a major thread company that I think is a step in the right direction, and certainly would give them some visibility that maybe they haven't had lately. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, the colors, I mean, the colors are beautiful. There's a nice sheen to it. It's a beautiful thread. Yeah, why not?
So what's the variegated look like? Is it real blocky? They haven't pulled that one out. I know you don't like variegated. Would you stitch someone in that? I know you don't like variegated, but it would be cool if you did like a little block of it.
Well, I will. There's one variegated here. Let me just see, because it looks, on the spool, it looks pretty stripey. There's got to be, I know what I'll do.
I'm making you work.
Yeah, you are. I'm working very hard here, and I'm just going to cut the thread instead of trying to pull it out from underneath the label. I'm going to actually get smart here. Okay, so this is variegated 1217. It's a yellow green, kind of a yellow green. Yeah, like I'm an expert on color. It's fairly, once you pull it off the spool, it's fairly gradual. It's not real blocky. It sure looks like it on the spool, but there's a nice gradual transition from. Yeah. Yeah, no, I wouldn't fault this. Mm-mm. 'Cause some of the there's that one set of DMC threads that, man, it feels like they dyed to here and stopped and put in a different color. And this has got a nice transition to it. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's good to know. In my stitch 'em up. I will stitch this in my stitch 'em up. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see how your stitch 'em up goes.
I think I'm going to brand that. I think I'm going to trademark that. Mean, yeah. Stitch 'em up.
Mm-hmm. Stitch 'em up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, but yeah, now here's, you know, this is the, I can see it already, the age old question when you have some extra left over after you stitched an area. You just wrap it right back on this thing. Yep.
So. Yeah, that'll be nice.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be nice. Oh, yep. You're making me want to add to my stash, Gary. This is bad.
Well, see, that's really why I keep talking about it, because I know what's happening in your head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah.
No problem. Here to help. Yep. So there we go. Anchor thread on spools. Cool idea. I think so. Now, I wonder what that does to retail space. Can you store more spools or less spools than skeins? In the given square footage.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yep. Well, that is not a problem for us, is it?
No. Although my basement might say so, but, you know.
Right.
There's only so much square footage, but I'm not buy all of the anchors, at least not right away.
Why not? There's only 400 colors. Come on, Beth.
That's right. Just need a shelf.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Explain it to my husband. You're what?
Yeah, well, that's an internal problem that you'll just have to address.
Yeah, you're innocent.
I'm going to sit here in St. Louis and then hear the fallout. That's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
We better call it. Holy smokes. Yeah, we definitely better call it right here. Check that out. Check out the anchor threads. I'll do a stitch them up for next Wednesday. And join us tonight, Kathy Ray. Speaking of threads, Kathy Ray is going to continue talking about metal threads. Christine Miller on Sunday. Oh, it's a whole metal thing. I didn't even put that together. Wire weaving with Christine Miller. Metal threads Wednesday, wire weaving on Sunday. Look at us. It's almost as if it's planned. It's not.
As you can tell.
Yes. All right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.